Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey everybody, welcome to Serious Issues, a sometimesly comic book podcast.
Yeah.
We're kind of monthly now. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
We had a moment where we were not monthly.
That.
We were like 8 weekly.
Yeah.
We're back on the month vibe until you suddenly... overwhelmed by baby.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm quite overwhelmed by baby right now.
Yeah, that's very true. There's a lot more of Siobhan than there was last episode.
Yeah.
But it's not actually her.
No, it's a parasite that I'm I'm choosing to grow in my body.
My name's Andrew Levins.
My name is Siobhan.
And every time we do an episode of Serious Issues, we talk about all the comics that we've ingested over the last few weeks. And we go through all the DC books, the Marvel books, the Image books, and everything else from other publishers. Every comic book we talk about on the show, we got, and you can get too, from King's Comics in Sydney, which is 370 George. No.
No.
402 George Street.
403 George Street.
I would have got there.
Yeah, eventually. Yeah. For a limited time.
Yeah, there is an imminent move.
Yeah.
Who knows where to?
No one.
Parramatta?
If only.
That would be good for me.
I genuinely have suggested that.
Yeah, right.
Actually,
if they do make that decision, I do not want it to be tracked back to me. Levins is the reason we all have to travel half an hour to get our comics now.
I mean, Phantom Zone closed down.
It did.
Pretty sad.
So there's obviously a very healthy and supportive comic book market in Parramatta. if you want to find these comics online, you can go to kingscomics.com. I'm loving comics again.
Yeah.
I'm like just I am reading like a crazy person.
Yeah, there's
lately.
Some good shit right lately.
And we begin every episode by going through all the number ones, all the brand new introductions to new series that we read over the last month.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this segment is called First Things First. First number one I want to talk about is Terry Moore's 5 Years.
Mm.
Did you read this?
I did.
Thank goodness.
Even though I haven't read Echo or Rachel Rising.
So that is what I did over the last month.
Nice.
I've read all of Strangers in Paradise, and which is same. Terry Moore's kind of like longest running. Oh, you're up to date on that now?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Oh, well done.
All of Strangers in Paradise.
How good.
I love it.
How
man.
Good and how emotional do you get during some of those?
It's just so good.
Yeah.
I just have so much respect for Terry Moore and like what he's managed to do kind of totally by himself. Like he owns all of his stuff. He owns the publishing rights. He owns everything. And he's managed to create these really like rich, intelligent worlds.
Yeah. So a little bit of background on Terry Moore. He is a writer and cartoonist. He is most famous for his first series, Strangers in Paradise, mm-hmm. which started in the 90s and spans over 100 issues. And also kind of you age with the characters in
yep.
real time. It's about essentially a romance book.
Yeah.
That involves elements of like thriller and deception and spies. And it's a ton of fun and constantly evolving over the years that it was published. He stopped publishing it in, I think it was the early 2000s where he had a brief hiatus,
mm-hmm.
somewhat of a hiatus. And then he published a series called Echo, which is a science fiction series about a government experiment gone wrong and a girl who has armor growing from her body.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and that was like a 36-issue run. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after that, he did a horror book called Rachel Rising.
Which Jim from King says is his best work.
I think Strangers in Paradise, for me, having now read them all, is definitely like, I think... I mean, it is the longest running, so there, you can go so much... You feel like you go so much further with the characters.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's some phenomenal moments in Rachel Rising, which is about, you know, a girl who one day dies and then wakes up. And her friend is a mortician, mm-hmm. and she wakes up on the table. And so Rachel rises, and then there's this kind of like crazy book that gets a lot more high concept as the series continues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
After that came a series, a 10 issue series called Motor Girl, which was loosely connected to Strangers in Paradise. There's also a reference to Echo. To Strangers in Paradise in Rachel Rising. There are a lot of like loose connections to these series.
Yeah.
But then last year, Terry Moore did Strangers in Paradise XXV, so 25. So volume 25.
Celebrating the 25th anniversary as well.
Oh, right. So was it, yeah, right. Was it both, or was it just celebrating?
I think it was just celebrating. But
That started as a series kind of catching up with what's going on with Cachou and
Francine
from Strangers in Paradise. And then quickly became a lot bigger themes than what we've seen, a lot more high concept kind of genre stuff than what we normally see in a Strangers in Paradise book. And suddenly he reveals that it's time for a Terryverse. And Strangers in Paradise set up this new series called 5 Years, because at the end of Strangers in Paradise, our characters learn that there's only 5 years left until the world, through the use of new weapons and new mm-hmm. weapons technology, kills itself, basically. So they have 5 years to live, but it's up to the combined characters of Strangers in Paradise, Motor Girl, Echo, and Rachel Rising to come together, and who are all women, by the way, to come together and save the world.
I hadn't even, like, I know this is silly, but, like, I hadn't even thought about the fact that they're all women. Like, I hadn't even... It's just such a... It's a world that is so full of women and about women and controlled by women that it never even occurred to me that that's, like, a cool thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, he's the best. I mean, like, I think if you wanted to poke holes in him as a creator, like, you know, he definitely draws sexy women. So if you have a problem with that, like,
yep.
you might have that. This might be a problem for you. I think he is someone that is capable of drawing sexy women, but does so with respect.
Absolutely, because I would say that he chooses to portray women who are like sexy in ways that are not necessarily conventional. He's not like a J. Scott Campbell where it's like a tiny waist and big boobs and big hips. There's like, they're proportionate and they look normal and they're like, they're sexy, but like he's celebrating things about women that may not be celebrated by the mainstream.
And also like as well drawn as they are so well written.
That's the biggest.
Yeah, absolutely. So I reread Strangers in Paradise 25 after I read Rachel Rising and Echo. It was an amazing month. Like that was such a great 2 weeks of just binging through those series. They're so rewarding. And as like Strangers in Paradise takes a little bit to get into, and then Echo is like this very, very well contained. Like it's bizarre to me that it hasn't been adapted into an action movie yet. Cause it would be so much fun. And I could see it, you know, being squeezed into a 90-minute movie or 100-minute movie or whatever. And then Rachel Rising, like it just hits the ground running, and like you read the first trade so quickly, and like you just immediately like, yep, cool. I want to find out what happens in this story.
Yeah.
Motor Girl, a very perfect little short story as well.
Yeah, Motor Girl is like lovely and genuinely touching, and like a really intelligently written story.
Definitely about PTSD, which is a topic very badly handled almost all the time by through comics, including most recently in.
Heroes
in Crisis. That's right. So I reread Strangers in Paradise 25, having read Rachel Rising and Echo, and it was just insane to me. Like, because when we first read it, we loved it just as fans of Strangers in Paradise. You hadn't even finished the series by that point.
No.
But it was a very easy to follow. There were listeners of the show that read it as their first Terry Moore book as well and got into it, enjoyed, followed along with the story really well.
Impressive.
But, like, man, going back and reading it, having read everything, it's so insane how connected it is to Echo and Rachel Rising. Like, they're actually more prominent, or as prominent, as Strangers in Paradise is.
And that's super satisfying. Like, that's the best thing about a shared universe, and, like, the only reason to really have a, like, sort of shared continuity is, like, it's the best when you can just read a story and it's super satisfying on its own. But then when it becomes this, like, larger thing, you can get so much more out of it. That's amazing, too.
Absolutely, yeah. I think we should actually talk about the first issue now of 5 years. So on the cover, you have characters from Strangers in Paradise, Motor Girl, Echo and Rachel Rising. But the book itself is pretty much entirely... Strangers in Paradise with a little bit of Motor Girl as we kind of see the points of view from mostly Cachou and Sam from Motor Girl.
Yep.
And their kind of thoughts on what might happen to the world and their role that they need to play. Cachou's kind of taken a back seat. She thinks she's done enough for the world, and it's up to Tambi her once boss.
Sister?
I can't remember. It's a mess. It's crazy. But, like, you know, she controls a bunch of very dangerous and powerful women.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone can fix it, it's her. But I think Kachu and Francine are going to find themselves a lot more connected to this than they want to be. Sam is acting as their bodyguard.
Yeah, that's fun.
Which is fun, yeah.
And I like Kachu's sort of attitude of like, we're going to go and we're going to just enjoy our last 5 years together as a family. And that's all you can kind of do.
Yeah, totally. But so we haven't really seen in the end of Strangers in Paradise 25 involved a lot of the Rachel Rising characters, including mm-hmm. Lilith, who is the first woman,
mm-hmm.
as in like the first woman created by God. She's a character in this series, but we haven't seen anyone from Echo show up yet. So I'm very excited to see when we get that happening.
But so far, it's like all of Terry Moore's other work. It's like incredibly enjoyable, but also like rich with emotional depth and just beautifully illustrated.
Yeah, it's excellent. I definitely would recommend reading everything he's done.
Yeah,
I think 5 years as a book.
I think if you just jumped into this, you could probably still get some good shit out of it.
Definitely get some good shit out of it. Mm. The art's still always good. And the writing is great too.
It looks great.
But, you know, he is writing characters that he's been writing for, like, you know, half his life now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of connection to those characters as a reader as well as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I love this.
Yeah, it's great.
This is why it's I read great. Comics.
Mm.
Yeah. So over to Marvel now. That comic was published by Terry Moore's own publishing studio.
He's so smart, guys.
Abstract Studio. Marvel is not owned by Terry Moore, but imagine if it was.
Imagine if it was.
It's funny to think that he has done a few things for Marvel over the years. He wrote Runaways for a bit.
Oh, wow. God, I don't think I've read that.
Me neither. But I just know that he was like the next one on after Joss Whedon.
Well, I definitely stopped reading the Joss Whedon one. That's not good.
But let's talk about some Marvel number
ones. Yeah.
We got Thanos number one, written by Tini Howard, with art by Ariel Olivetti and Antonio Favella.
I found this boring. I stopped reading it.
Yeah. So I think Tini Howard writes a great Gamora and a great Thanos, but the problem is she's been told that this comic needs to be the origin story of Gamora and Thanos. It needs to align with the MCU take as well as the comic book take.
That seems tough.
Yeah, it's a really, really tough ask for her to do. And I think the problem is not with anything that she's done. It's just the story is not a particularly interesting one.
Yeah, and it seems like something that was pushed out just to tie in with the movie release, which you can't be mad at because, like, at least they're trying to do that for mm-hmm. once in their silly little lives. But, yeah, I didn't enjoy this issue.
Yeah, it's a shame, though, because it's a great creative
team. Yeah.
And Tini Howard is someone that I want to see succeed, especially on a big superhero book.
I like Tini Howard a lot.
Me too. How about Savage Avengers number one?
Okay, I feel a little dumb because I definitely borrowed this and then definitely forgot to read it.
It's a funny one. So Savage Avengers is the one that is an Avengers team with Conan the Barbarian on it.
Which sounds great
in theory. It's Conan the Barbarian on the cover alongside Venom, Punisher, Wolverine, Elektra, and Dr. Voodoo.
Great. It's a great lineup.
Yeah, it's written by Jerry Duggan with art by Mike Diodato, who has decided, you know what? I'm going to do regular panel layouts again.
And I support that.
The book is much more readable because of that decision. We also have, I think, Frank Martin, possibly Laura Martin. There's two Martin colorists.
There's two Martins. Which one is it?
Oh, damn it. I don't know who it is. It's Steve Martin. Steve Martin colored this book. But this is all about Wolverine and Conan both bumping into each other while infiltrating a weird castle. And then inside this castle are a bunch of figures sacrificing people in the arts for the greater good to kind of appease some weird god they want to resurrect or whatever. Wolverine is too late to save Dr. Voodoo from being sacrificed.
Oh, no.
And
so is this set in the past or is it set now? How is Conan here? Why is Conan here?
I don't know how he is, but he's here to have a team up.
Right.
And it ends with Voodoo and Wolverine being killed and then being put into coffins. And then it ends with Frank Castle over his wife and children's graves and they've all been stolen.
Oh,
I think
God.
I couldn't work out if they've died.
That sounds... I mean, I know it's called Savage Avengers, but even that sounds like needlessly grim.
I mean, the Batman has done this in the past. That's how the Under the Red Hood story starts.
Comics love like a grave robbing.
Yeah, yeah. I think I may have misread the last bit. No, whatever. The it's, I'm going to give this another couple issues for the team to get together. It's fun. The art's like the best Diodato's done in a while, in my opinion.
It looks good. And the colors are good, whoever did them.
Yes. Steve Martin.
Steve Martin.
He's a man of many talents. Yeah, I'll give this another shot. It's fun. I mean, Avengers books. Team books are fun. Frank Martin did the colors. There you go. But yeah, I'm keen to see how the rest of the team gets brought in. Venom especially.
Yeah. Who's Venom right now? Is it Eddie Brock?
Yeah, Eddie Brock's still Venom.
There you go.
Yeah. So those are the Marvel number ones, unless you read more.
Nope. No, I don't think so. It seems surprisingly small.
Yeah, I am being very selective with books that I start now. How about DC? They put out a couple of number ones in the last month.
They sure
have. Deceased is a new series written by Tom Taylor with art by Trevor Hairsine.
And Stefano Guadiano?
Yep.
And James Harren.
James Harren. So an amazing lineup of artists.
Yeah.
With colors by Rain Barreto. And Deceased is... look, I want to start by saying I'm a fan of almost everything I've read from Tom Taylor before.
Yeah, absolutely. This,
and the idea of him doing like what looks like a pretty dark story in DC with like all the DC characters is actually kind of appealing because he managed to turn me around when he did Injustice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A really dark concept that I was like, that doesn't appeal to me at all. But then I actually read it and I was like, this is really, really great.
Yep.
And he's clearly a massive fan of like, you know, every DC character. And gave everyone a great time to shine. But Deceased is close. The closest comparison point is Marvel Zombies. Who writes The Walking Dead again? Robert Kirkman. And you know, it's Sean Phillips did the art on Marvel Zombies.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, yeah. Which was like that is like a much more enjoyable book than you would expect it to be.
Absolutely. And I found this much more enjoyable than I expected.
I did not.
Really?
It was like the first Tom Taylor book and I was like, oh, I don't need to read any more of this.
Not even the James Harren pages?
Mm. I mean, I thought the art was great, but like it's a virus that turns people into zombies and you catch it by looking at...
Social media. It's a commentary.
I can't do it. I'm sorry.
But I was like fully prepared to not enjoy this because I was like, ugh. More zombie stories. I don't need that. I don't need a really grim DC story. Nah, not for me. But I thought that it being the virus being a like compromised version of the anti-life equation, I thought that was fun. That's a fun take on it.
That's fun, but then you get it by looking at social media.
Okay, I don't hate that as a commentary. You're like, you are so mad at any time anyone criticizes technology just because you love it. I thought it was like not the dumbest way that you can have the virus.
Someone has got 30 years.
I'm like
on
a proper Luddite. I hate technology. That's my job. But I thought it was like well done, all things considered. Even in a book that ends with you know, Bruce being brutally attacked by Nightwing and Tim Drake. I had quite a lot of fun with this.
Actually, I did say earlier that Tom Taylor loves all of the DC universe, but he has it in for Dick. He does not like Nightwing. Nightwing was the first character, like one of the first characters to die in Injustice, and he's the first character to turn into a zombie in this issue.
I support it.
Really?
Yeah.
Dick needs a break.
Dick can die. Nah, no way.
Rick can die. Bring Dick back.
I don't know.
I want a book called We Love Dick, and it's all of the like gay characters in the DC universe forcing Dick Grayson to be their wingman and going out to try and pick up.
That sounds good.
It sounds good. You're limited because there's like three gay characters in the DC universe.
It's a very short
But I'm here for the Alan Scott issue. Is going to be great. Yeah.
Is he?
One of the Alan Scotts is gay, so they need to go off world.
Alternate universe, Alan Scott. I thought this was pretty good fun. Nicola would have to draw it. I enjoyed this much more than I thought, and I thought Tom Taylor actually has a really good voice for, like he made Cyborg kind of funny in those like Apocalypse pages.
Oh yeah, when he gets his tongue cut out.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, Tom Taylor is great at doing witty parts, and the dialogue in this is great. But then everyone.
Everyone turns into a zombie when they look at their phones.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny. I thought it was funny. Guys, if you're old like me and you love shaking your fist at a cloud, then join me in enjoying.
But if you're also old like me, but you think, hey, the kids aren't too bad, everyone, give them a chance.
It's not the kids that I hate, it's their phones.
DC also put out Year of the Villain, number one, a 25-cent book that
this is what they do every single flippin' Free Comic Book Day, and it annoys me because it should just be their Free Comic Book Day issue. Like, they put this out the same week as Free Comic Book Day, and it's like a taster of what they have coming out in the following year. Mm. And they should make that their Free Comic Book Day issue instead of reprinting something old, which is what they did again this year. So and I find it annoying.
The theory is that people come in, get the free comic, and then they're like, oh, we should support the comic book store that we got the free comics
from.
What's
the cheapest thing I can get?
What's the cheapest shit on the stands? 25 cents. That'll do. So DC Year of the Villain is the most dangerous summer event starts here.
Oh, no.
And we have Scott Snyder, Brian Bendis, and James Tynion IV on writing duties across three different chapters with art by Jim Chung, Alex Maleev, and Francis Manapul.
Literally no women involved in the making of any of these comics.
Jessica Chen is an associate and editor.
Well, phew. Thank goodness.
And Marie Javins is an editor as well.
I mean, like, cool that there's actually some women in editorial.
Nancy Spears is the vice president of sales.
There you go.
Allison Gill, senior vice president of manufacturing and operations.
Oh, lovely.
Michelle R. Wells, vice president and executive editor. Also, young reader.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Are any of these going to be young reader friendly?
Is she saying is there a company called Young Reader or a division called Young Reader?
That just sounds like DC a description.
Like it's just the crediting. Michelle R. Wells, Young Reader.
DC have been making an effort to put out lots of Young Reader books.
And yeah, and they're good. Mostly looking pretty good.
Actually good. What was in this? Because I did read it, but now I forget.
The first story was the one I liked the least. Oh, no, that was okay. The Scott Snyder one where it was like Lex Luthor ends up blowing himself up or some shit.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, that seems so, it's kind of intriguing. But then the best one came from Bendis, who wrote like a one about Leviathan coming to Gotham.
Yeah.
That was okay.
That's fine.
And then, because they suspect that the Red Hood is behind it.
Uh-huh.
That's
interesting. Yeah.
But then the finale, the Justice one written by James Tynion IV, is just the like not Grant Morrison written Grant Morrison-esque cosmic nonsense stuff that I just, unless he writes it, I hate it so much.
Yeah. It's hard to do. Like, it's really hard to do.
Yeah. And also the Batman Who Laughs is in it. Hard pass.
Who laughs. And it's like, it's silly to me because DC have some like genuinely exciting stuff coming out. Like, I'm so keen for the Greg Rucka, Mike Perkins, Lois Lane book and the Matt Fraction, Steve Lieber, Jimmy Olsen book.
I don't even know about those. That's awesome.
Isn't that crazy how under the radar they are?
That's great because I'm about to review like all of two DC
rip
books
into
in this
every
episode.
Single DC
no, I'm only reading the ones I like, but there's two of them.
Yeah.
So I could use a couple of more DC books that I like.
Yeah.
And I saw that Jean Luen Yang is doing something else for DC as well.
I didn't even see that.
That's cool. Who knows where it is? You scroll past
so
it.
So sorry.
Preview books are fun. Oh, he's going to write he's taking over the Terrifics.
Cool. That's smart. That's good.
But it sucks that he's like, I don't know. I feel like he should be giving his own thing.
Yeah. I mean, like DC. I want to love you so much, DC. And those books sound genuinely exciting to me. Like, great job bringing back Greg Rucka and Matt Fraction. Bringing Matt Fraction back to superhero books with a flippin' Steve Lieber illustrated Jimmy Olsen book
is
like,
excellent.
That's massive. That's going to be so fun. That's going to be so great.
I want them to do more fringy DC books that like just live in their own little space and I can read those without to like try and pay attention to what Scott Snyder's doing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just don't pay attention to what Scott Snyder's doing.
But when, you know, when he writes he's writing the main event, it's hard not to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. I don't know, man.
How's, do you still read Aquaman? By Kelly Sue DeConnick.
Yeah.
I feel bad that I didn't even read an issue of that. I'll pick up the first trade.
Yeah.
I'm still a very supportive guy. Image Comics this month.
Can I talk about ones that you haven't read yet?
Of course.
So I read issue one of Batman and the Outsiders by Brian Hill.
Spoil
and
away.
Derek Soy.
Derek Soy or Dexter Soy?
Dexter. There you go. And I don't love Dexter Soy. His art's a bit Aspen-y? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I like him in the right book. I actually quite liked him on Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Yeah, I could see him fitting that. And this is probably like a bit of a similar book. So this is like the, I love the Outsiders. They're sort of the X-Force of Batman.
So it's like Katana?
The classic team is like Katana, Black Lightning, Geo-Force. No Geo-Force to be seen, unfortunately, guys.
Was Metamorpho ever an Outsider?
Possibly. I think so. But this team is Black Lightning, Katana, Orphan, who's Cassandra Cain,
mm-hmm.
and what's this dude again? The Signal.
The Signal, Duke.
Duke.
So this is the book that everyone thought was cancelled. They actually brought it back, did they?
I have no idea.
Yeah, right.
Yeah?
Yeah. And so
this is the team that Batman's like, I can't be involved, guys. I have too much other shit on. So, Black Lightning, this is your team. But the whole team's like, we don't trust you, Black Lightning, because you're not Batman. And so this issue is like getting the team together and then being like, everyone trust Black Lightning.
But they already did this in Detective.
Yeah, they did. It wasn't a super strong first issue, I have to say. I'm willing to give it like another couple of issues just to see if it grows into something cool. But yeah, it wasn't my favorite, I have to say.
Damn. Bummer. Any more DC ones?
No, that's it.
Image Comics put out a number one that I loved, and that is Ascender, number
cool.
one.
Cool. Oh, man. This is like one of those like guilt things for me that I've never read Descender.
Have you not read Descender, you could absolutely pick this up and enjoy it. Jeff Lemire wrote this one with Dustin Nguyen. And, you know, I feel like we've had years and years of celebrating everything Jeff Lemire does.
Mm.
But this is like one of those books that he does that I feel like this is like his least read and talked about.
It goes under the radar.
Yeah.
But people love it.
A science fiction series called Descender that went for 30-something issues with Dustin Nguyen doing art the entire time.
I love Dustin Nguyen.
And it was about like a robot
it's like Astro
being
Boy.
Yeah, like an Astro Boy-esque robot being reunited with his owner many years later and during a massive war between robots and people. And that ends in a pretty gloomy way, but then you get a new beginning for Ascender, which is a new story set after the events of Descender from a point of view of completely different and new characters. And we are now in a world of magic.
Ooh.
Everything is run by a horrible, cruel witch. So it's not, even though there's no more robots, it's still a bad place for everyone to live in. And we meet a girl who lives atop a mountain, but she is kind of forbidden from being a part of regular society because of her father's insistence not to submit to the witch, mm-hmm, basically. Mm-hmm. He is actually a character. He's a character from Descender.
Okay.
But I feel like there's enough going on in this issue. I mean, you'll get... You'll be won over pretty quickly by Dustin Nguyen's beautiful watercolor
art.
They're
so beautiful.
But yeah, there's a great... Obviously, a very rewarding final page. If you've read all of Descender, it's a fan favorite character. Crashes into the life of the main character of Ascender. But cool. Yeah, as a new book, I would definitely recommend it to those who have read and those who haven't read Descender.
Hmm.
That's great.
Nice. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I mean, Lemire is relatively incapable of doing a truly bad book.
It's true.
And this is a truly good one.
Lovely.
Speaking of watercolor art, I read issue number one of Beasts of Burden, The Presence of Others.
Oh, again, this Free Comic Book Day week was really hard for me.
And you did it. Man, that's your second pregnant Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah. I got really sick afterwards as well. I was out of action for a couple of days.
Shit, you got it. Yeah.
But it was a really good day.
No more pregnant Free Comic
no
Book
more
Day,
pregnant.
Siobhan.
Yeah, fucking hell.
And I know they're your favorite thing to do.
The last one. but it was a really good Free Comic Book Day. Thanks
yeah.
to everyone who came.
Unreal.
It was really nice.
Beast of Burden, The Presence of Others, written by Evan Dorkin, art by Jill Thompson, colors. Is it colors or lettering? Letters by Nate Piekos.
Jill Thompson generally does her in colors.
Yeah. And this is a book about...
I love Jill Thompson on Beast of Burden as well.
Yeah. It's a book about mostly about dogs. Yeah. But the dogs are like ghost hunting dogs.
Yeah.
That are trained in the dark arts. And
yeah,
and,
it's like...
Well, yeah, like what if...
Hellboy dogs.
What if Doctor Strange was a bunch of dogs?
That's a much better comic book than Doctor Strange.
Also the name of this episode. So I haven't read all of this. I know you have read most of the series. Beast of Burden and The Presence of Others is the first issue of Beast of Burden that I've read in which humans feature heavily.
Ooh.
So this is them having to work alongside a kind of ghost hunting father-daughter team.
Cool.
And it's really, really great. Obviously, you care a lot about.
It's so pretty.
You care a lot about the dogs in this comic, but the stakes feel higher when there's human lives on the line. Yeah. But yeah, I thought this was really, really good. The Evan Dorkin and Jill Thompson do this series in such a way that you could just pick up any of them, and the world is very easy to grasp.
It's incredibly accessible. It's really good, fun, like probably spooky stuff, but not like not actually scary.
Just yeah,
just a really
fun, creepy horror, like yeah. You know. But like, yeah, it's just Eldritch great horror. Shit, and it's like yeah, like heroic dogs, like biting enormous mutant rats that burst up from the ground beneath them.
What's not to love?
There's a little bit of blood and a little bit of like gore, but it's kind of like schlocky, yeah. 50s-esque kind of gore. Evan Dorkin definitely leans into that. But the story is excellent. The voices he gives all the dogs is tons of fun.
Yeah,
it's great shit.
Super enjoyable.
Dark Horse regularly do sales on their app, mm-hmm. that you can pick up this entire series for like less than $20. I'm sure the trades aren't that much more expensive too.
No, and there's a really nice hardcover edition, which I think is still available, that collects like the first 12 or so Beast of Burden issues.
Yeah, right, cool.
Which is super, super worthwhile. Unreal. Tracking down.
I realized that I shot ahead before we did all of our image number ones. What do you got there?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I've got, I read the first issue of Excellence, which is written by Brandon Thomas with art, hang on, who's on art? Kari Randolph.
Right.
And colors by Emilio Lopez, letters by Darren Bennett. And it's magic. It's magic, guys, but it's magic in a world in which all of the magic users are black, and they are like, it's sort of revealed at the end that they're kind of semi, the end of the issue, that they're like kind of guardian angels or magical guardians there to help regular people through like difficult times in their life.
Wait, regular people as in like non-white
I don't know if it's exclusively just to help white people do things that are hard for them.
That's an amazing concept. That's true.
So far, the only people that I have seen is black people helping white people.
Right, there are regular black people and then magic black people, right?
I think
or
so.
Or are all black people magic?
Unconfirmed.
I'm okay with both.
Yeah, I'm okay with either. But it's kind of like a magical sort of unseen extra world existing in New York City. And we follow, like, the son of the kind of head of the magic world as he, like, struggles with, like, connecting to his magic as a child and then finally engaging with it as a young man and going through his kind of initiation ceremony.
Yep.
In which he helps a guy propose to his girlfriend. But it's, like, it's very, very high stakes and it's taken very seriously. Like, he, to make the guy realize how much he has to lose, he, like... almost like he pushes the woman off a building kind of thing. Like he breaks the building underneath her. So the guy's like, oh my God, I could never lose her. So it's like, and the art's really, it's really highly stylized. It's very dynamic. It's very fast paced. It looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit silly, but I sort of enjoyed it. Like I find kind of that contemporary fantasy stuff. Sometimes I get a little bit like, this is silly. And it is silly, but it's
comic should
it
be.
Has a kind of Afrofuturist vibe.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is super enjoyable.
A good companion to the current future set Black Panther run.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is wrapping up soon.
Yeah.
So maybe this could take its place.
And I really enjoyed it. It looks like it's going to get incredibly serious and incredibly heavy quite quickly. But I recommend picking this up. So this is Excellence. It's a Skybound Image comic. And I rate it.
Unreal. Final image, number one, that I read and loved
is by
Ken Garing, who we talked about over a year ago on the podcast. He did a book called Planetoid Praxis,
mm-hmm.
which itself was a sequel to the original Planetoid series that mm-hmm. neither of us read, but... Planetoid Praxis was just one of those great, you know, second series that just, you know, let you know everything, just threw you into a world.
Yeah.
And it didn't really matter. You didn't really know what happened before it. I'm sure it would have been a better read had you done it. But for us, it was enjoyable enough without it.
Absolutely.
He is a writer and artist. He has a kind of like unique, almost like Mike Mignola influence kind of art, like a less dark Mike Mignola. Yeah, he has a new book called Gogor. Gogor? G-O-G-O-R.
Mm.
G-O-G-O-R. Do you know you're too
yes.
old?
No, I remember that. Good Lord.
But yeah, Gogor is a book about... It's like a fantasy book, which, as many will know, is not my cup of tea. But my thing that I don't like about fantasy is that, like, they always open with, like, so much lore.
Yeah,
and you've
got
to learn the names
of,
like, 10 different species who all have different dialects. And
they
come from, like, 13-generation-old families. And here is the middle names of all 13 of those grandfathers.
Just say you hate Lord of the Rings and be done with it, man.
But this fantasy book throws you straight into a chase as our main character escapes from a bunch of soldiers on the back of a giant mole while they ride behind him on giant ants. And he is guarding a scroll that he was given moments before he started being chased. He quickly meets someone who helps him and introduces him to some other rebels. And so, yeah, this is his journey to basically...
wake up an ancient
deliver it,
being.
Deliver a scroll to the top of a mountain. I didn't look too closely at the cover of this, so when it is revealed that... like once he takes this thing to the mountain, that he awakens this like Hulk-esque kind of like fantastic beast beneath the mountain. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But if you look at the cover, that beast takes up half of it. So I'm just blind as hell.
But man, what a great first issue. So fun, so gorgeous, like really beautifully illustrated, fun, fast paced, and like, I would say all ages friendly, but
absolutely, not
exclusively all ages.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, you have the young protagonist and the world is, you know, just this fun fantasy world. You know, like world building, the world in which the characters live is one of the most important parts of a comic book. But I feel like more than any genre, maybe sci-fi as well is guilty of it, but like they put so much effort into telling you what the world is about and what's happened in the world before this, that it's always so much more compelling if you learn about the world as, you know, your main character is being chased through it.
Yeah.
I loved this issue. So good. I'm 100% signed up for this series.
Absolutely. Highly, highly recommend Gogor.
Yeah. Check that out. It's the Image book came out a couple weeks ago and issue number 2 is a few weeks away. Good shit. June 12th it comes out. So I got an IDW series that I also loved.
Okay, I didn't like this that much.
Oh, damn. So this is Ghost Tree. Coming published through IDW. I mostly loved it because of Simon Gaines' art.
It's very nice to look at and the colours are really lovely.
Bobby Curnow wrote this one. Maybe I should extend that same accidental criticism I did last time we were talking about Ronan Island, about... I'm not sure if either of these creators with a background in being Japanese, but this is a book.
Background in being Japanese.
I studied being Japanese for many years, but this is a story set in Japan about a dying grandfather who tells his young grandson to come visit him at this place in the woods near his house.
When he's dead, right?
Yeah, 20 years from now, whatever, when I've died. 10 years after I die, come meet me here. And by chance, he goes home when he's an adult and heads to that same spot, and where he has a discussion with his grandfather, who is like, so our family can talk to ghosts. And I wish you didn't come back here because there's nothing for you here and I wasted my entire life here. So don't hang out here and use your abilities to talk to ghosts. And he's like, oh, but I kind of hate my life back home. Maybe I will stay here.
Right.
So I don't know where the series is going to go. I love the art. It was a curious concept.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it looks like it's going to be a kind of like love story. But, you know, this man has a boring life in the city. And maybe it's time to have a cool life in ghost country.
Yeah, I'm into that.
Hang out with your dead grandpa.
I don't know why I got bored of it halfway through and just stopped reading it.
I mean, sometimes it could be a mood-based thing. Mm. And from what I read about pregnancy...
I'm full of moods, guys.
Yeah, babies are 75%
like
mood.
I cried like 3 times this morning.
That's all the placenta
no
is.
Reason for just,
extra mood.
It's just extra tears.
I couldn't watch anything remotely heart-pulling with Bea when she was pregnant because she would just like well up and start crying. I remember we were in the car and I put on Umbrella by Rihanna.
Yeah.
And a minute into it, I looked over and I was like, are you crying? She's like, this song's just so beautiful.
I was listening to Elton John on the way in, and I just started bawling listening to
which
Candle
song?
In the Wind.
Crocodile
so
Rock.
Yeah, Crocodile Rock. La, la, la. Just Benny and the Jets.
I'm sure Benny and the Jets is one of those ones that, like, you, if you actually read the story of what it's about, you'd be like, oh my God.
God, that's so heavy.
Like, you know that song, like it's better known as a disco song by Boney M. It's like, Sunny, mm-hmm. yesterday my life
is
feeling so great. It's originally like a soul song by like, I think it's Bobby Hebb.
Yeah. I only know it.
And it's a song about his dead brother.
Oh God.
And it's like, I told V that one, and she was pregnant and she couldn't talk for like an hour. Because you think about every line of that song, I'm like, oh my God, it's about that's his dead so brother. I read Spencer and Locke 2.
Oh, okay. Did you read the full first series?
Yeah, I read the trade of that. A lot of our listeners highly recommended it because it's about like, kind of like, what if Calvin and Hobbes grew up.
I was going to say, what if Garfield grew up?
So it's like a boy who is essentially Calvin grown up.
Yeah.
And he has a panther called Locke. Mm. So Spencer and Locke.
Looks very Black Sad-y.
Yeah, but the two of them, he's like an inept police officer, he kind of uses his relationship with his toy panther to help rescue stuff. But it was very much like very tropey, damsel in distress, kind of by numbers, dark crime fiction book, which I've read tons of, so I didn't really need to read any more of it.
Yeah.
But I do like the concept that I came back for a second one. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I did appreciate that there's like a bunch of, what's that one? The army comic book strip.
I don't know.
Is called Roach Riley. It's called like Dumby Doobie or something stupid. And it's like, you know, about like a lazy guy in the army.
Hilarious.
But he plays this new villain who comes to town to ruin everyone's lives and kill a bunch of people. It was a bit unnecessarily grim. Look, I still think it's a really good concept. It's just not one that appeals to me that much.
Especially well executed.
It certainly appeals to some people, so that's fine. Yeah. How about Eve Stranger?
So this is the new Black Crown book, written by David Barnett with art by Philip Bond, colours by Eva De La Cruz, letters by Jane Eyre. And this is, it's like, what's that movie where, Memento.
Oh, yep.
It's like, this girl wakes up and has to read a letter from herself to remember what's going on in her life. And it turns out she's like a cool assassin.
But is the comic told backwards?
In a sense. Oh, wow. In the sense that you're like, don't know what's really happening until the end.
Okay, sure. Yep.
So not really. That's not what backwards means. And then there's like a fun little kind of strip at the end set in an alternate universe with the same character.
Okay.
So she's like, am I a reporter dreaming of being an assassin or am I an assassin dreaming of being a reporter?
That's fun.
It's really fun. And the mystery is genuinely compelling and like really interesting. And the art's really great and the colors are really lovely. And it's like a clever concept. At first I was like, this is just Memento. But with a girl with purple hair. But it's actually... She's like a, she's been bred to be a super assassin and she's been like, but there's like something in her blood that's going to kill her in like 1 week. And so she has to try and find a cure for it. And, it's just like, it's just cool.
Great.
It's clever. I just really enjoyed it. Really enjoyable first issue. I highly rate it.
Awesome.
Check it out.
Yeah,
Eve Stranger.
I'm stealing it. Cool. I like ticking things off that are easy. So let's do DC now because I've only got two comics. But I missed out on the Green Lantern this month.
It was a really good issue. It's a really, really good issue.
One of our friends, Rebecca, said it was easily the best issue of the series. And I'm like, fuck, I need to get it.
It's really good.
Did it sell out here really quickly or something? Or I don't know, maybe there's way more
possibly
people jumping on board, which is great. Yeah.
And I think that specific issue got like a weird amount of press, and I think people were suddenly like, oh, this is actually a great series.
Yeah, I might rip open an expensive variant on the shelf and read that.
Man, it's worth it. I love this series. It's so good. It's so clever. It's so well written. And Liam Sharp is just doing the best work of his career as far as I can tell. Like, it is so good. And that was a really, really great solid issue. Really clever. Really well done.
Damn.
Loved it.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah. And hopefully I will in the future. The Wildstorm. We're rattling towards the end of this Warren Ellis and John Davis Hunt with Steve Buccellato series. I can't work out if that sentence made any sense. When you forget
halfway
how you start.
Through what you were saying. Yeah, I think it did.
Baby brain. it's contagious. But yeah, I've kind of, not so much a criticism, I've been concerned about this series feeling like a setup then leads to nothing. But with this issue, because obviously this is like the kind of reimagining of the Wildstorm universe through 24 issues, as Warren Ellis kind of like reintroduces them all to like new versions of all the characters in this new continuity. But this is the issue where I was like, you know what? I don't really care what they do afterwards. I've enjoyed the hell out of this run so far, and I hope it ends as well as it's been reading.
Yeah.
Until this point.
It's super enjoyable, and John Davis Hunt is like so great. Like, there's so few artists that I really love reading a full issue of just action.
Yeah.
And I would just read all of the action comics from him.
Because I've just been reading so much manga lately. That's like all I've been doing.
Yeah. Just a full like full volume of fighting.
Yeah, I've been reading. I finished all of up to date on One Punch Man.
One Punch Man
starts as a parody of like fight shonen comics.
Yeah.
Shonen manga, and then like midway through, they're like, oh, we may have done everything we can with this joke. You know what? What if we just expand all? Because like One Punch Man is like this overpowered guy who ends every fight with one punch and has grown bored with fighting because
cool.
he can't find a worthy opponent. But instead of like, you know, just it was like almost it started as a strip and then it got turned into a manga and then anime. But now they like he's the only one that everyone else takes the world so seriously. It's like this big like superheroes versus monsters thing. And then, One Punch Man is just in the middle, like not taking anything seriously, like bored of all the fighting and just wanting to like cook hot pot and shop at sales. But they instead expanded on all of the other characters in the universe. And like, you have these like, you know, expansive long fight scenes and set up where you don't see One Punch Man for like, you know, several volumes.
Cool. That's fun.
It's really fun. And it's like, yeah, it is like a serious fight manga now. And God, the artist on that, Hatara is his name, just a phenomenal penciler. Just, yeah, that's the best shit.
Cool.
Super intricate, insane monsters being punched in the head by weird superheroes. It's great.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, you'd really, really love it, actually, because every week it's just like a new weird superhero that joins the team.
If only I didn't hate screens so much, because they give you anti-life.
I think all of... Oh, that's right. That's why you don't read the Shonen Jump.
I'm just very conscientious.
What if the deceased virus, you only got through reading manga on an iPad?
I mean...
It would like, still spread. It would take longer.
It probably wouldn't be as devastating to the world. We'd probably just get rid of a lot of nerds. It might be good.
Myself included. but yeah, the Wildstorm, like, yeah, we're finally seeing all of the heroes work together to take down the two forces that they are working against, I guess.
The team's finally together.
Yeah, and I particularly...
Super satisfying.
It's good to see Midnighter and Apollo on the team.
Yeah.
And also great to see, like, the extent of some of the characters' powers as they, you know, are finally able to use them on a bigger scale. It's great shit.
It's really good.
Yeah. I still, like, part of me is like, oh, I just wish that there was something else announced for after these 24 issues. Because, like,
I mean, you never know. DC are doing pretty good at, like, doing pretty well at sort of surprise.
Yeah, true.
Surprises.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe it'll be a surprise.
John Davis Hunt definitely deserves a break after this. Because I don't think he's missed a month.
He deserves an Eisner.
Yeah. Give him to him.
Yeah.
I have been absolutely loving Wonder Twins, the Wonder Comics. Comic written by Mark Russell with art by Stephen Byrne. This is a kind of like comedy comic about the Wonder Twins who were they made for the Super Friends?
I think they were made for the Super Friends TV show.
So they are very goofy characters. And so we get like a young version of them who have like two twins from outer space that are put on like almost like a maintenance crew for the Justice League.
Yeah.
They're
like interns.
but this is it's also a high school book. This book was about dating and the friend zone and kind of like showed why Zan is a really great character. He's like this goofy loser kid that doesn't care what people think of him.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's like Mark Russell is so great at sort of dealing like doing that kind of like an issue a comic thing, which can feel so contrived and like annoying, but doing it in such a like clever, fun way that
and
you
sweet, that's
sweet
the sweetness
and funny
of, yeah.
and like smart and it's just such a it's such a delight.
It's that American kind of like TV trope where once a season they'll do a very special episode where they deal with a real life problem. But every single issue of his comics do that.
But it's Zan's so funny. Oh man, it was a really funny issue.
Lots of great sight gags throughout it.
Yep.
Stephen Byrne, maybe the best artist that Mark Russell has been paired with yet. Steve Pugh. Pretty hard to beat. But
yeah. But this is like, for this book, so perfect. Like, it's perfect sort of YA fodder. I hope this book isn't just popular with old people going like, this is great, kids. Yeah. Learn some lessons. I hope that it's actually enjoyable for kids as well.
My favorite is their friend who is extremely smart and is
her name's Polymath.
Polymath, get that's it. Right. And they say, "What do you suppose she thinks about during those long walks home?" And she starts thinking about testicular cancer, mm-hmm. and then like is almost about like you know going to in her head like. She's works out the
of
cure
a way to fix it.
To testicular cancer, but then she's interrupted by two like workmen jeering at her, and then just like, oh, never mind. Oh well, it's great, 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 great couple of pages.
Yeah, really funny, man. Just like I could just read out so many panels, but that would be dull for everyone. But it's super enjoyable.
Yeah, totally agree.
I read Shazam. Issue 5.
Is Jeff Johns still doing this one?
Jeff Johns and Dale Eaglesham. So like, it's hard to. Like, man, look at Billy's jaw. It's great. That's what you want. But I sort of... The extended Shazam family, I understand why it's, like, good in a number of ways for, like, various kinds of representation and that sort of stuff. And I love the, like, extended foster family thing. Like, that's really cool.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But there's a lot of characters in this, and that, like, unless you're super across all of the Shazam kids now, it's kind of hard to follow in bits. But this issue brings, like, Talky Tawny, the talking tiger.
Oh, great. Okay. Oh, my God. And he is ripped.
He is a ripped talking tiger, I'll tell you what. And so they're kind of like in an alternate universe. They've been trapped by like Mr. Mind, I think, is the big bad of this series.
Right.
And Black Adam is coming to like take back his power from Billy, and he's going to fight Dr. Savannah. But then they're also in like all these kind of different lands, like games world and like kids world and okay, stuff fine. Like that. So it's like it's definitely for a younger reader. And I think it is smart in terms of if you liked the Shazam movie, I imagine that this is very tonally similar. I haven't seen it, but I've heard it's good.
I have. I loved it. It's like it's the first like DC movie that I don't have to give a disclaimer when I say I liked it.
Yeah, I do want to see it. I just haven't gotten around to it. So I think this is like probably other people get more out of it than I do, but it's still totally enjoyable. And Dale Eaglesham is like. Great.
After I saw the movie, I read Shazam and the Monster Society of Evil.
It's so good.
Written and drawn by Jeff Smith, mm-hmm. Most famous for Bone. That is so much fun. That book is so good. Like it's
the best Shazam comic.
Like it's a truly all ages book. Like it's enjoyable for everyone who reads it. At no point are you like, this is a book for babies.
No.
And I imagine it's one of those books that like deals with a few darker themes from like a kiddie like point of view. That like those are so. Enticing when you're a certain kind of kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, oh wow, there's death in this book. That's exciting. Yeah. But it's not like cool death. It's like, you know, spooky death.
Genuine death.
Yeah, yeah.
Real death.
Beautiful cartooning and just a great story.
Yeah. It's ridiculous how little Captain Marvel stuff is actually in print.
Mm.
But that is in print, and I really do recommend trying to track a copy down through your local comic book store.
It's a shame that Black Adam is so caught up in, like, because they attach the Rock to that at some point.
Yeah.
And I really do wonder, had that not been a thing on people's minds, or, you know, in studio talks or whatever, would we have gotten some form of Black Adam stuff in the first Shazam movie? Would that have made it too complicated? I don't know.
So he doesn't. Because it's Dr. Sivan is the bad guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I do want to see that.
And it's a really, like, hammy 90s version of it, but it totally works.
That's what you need. Like, that's what Shazam, that's what Shazam's all about.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's like, it's such a movie, like...
Well, I wanted a doddering old man.
Yeah.
But we get, like, a middle-aged
like
dude.
A buff dude.
Not quite. Yeah. Yeah.
Lame. That's the whole point. But there's such great representation in Captain Marvel and, like, his family and stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
totally,
like,
yeah. Well, they're definitely
foster families, people with disabilities. It's good fun.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about Marvel Comics now.
Let's do it.
Are you still reading War of the Realms?
Yes, I am.
I'm enjoying this.
Yes, good fun.
It's like, you know, it's not certainly not a groundbreaking series in any way, but as far as just being, like, enjoyable popcorn event book, it's ticking that box in a big way.
Absolutely. It's not trying to reinvent the comic book event wheel. It's just a bunch of guys fighting in the various locations that you recognize. Great.
Yeah,
that's what
totally.
I want.
And fun, weird team ups. And I love Jason Aaron writes Punisher so well.
Yeah.
In that he barely gives him any dialogue and just, like, makes him like a gun crazed maniac, but like a funny one. And so he's used to great lengths in this, in this series.
Jason Aaron writes, like, he writes a good Spidey. He writes a good She-Hulk. He writes a good everyone. I wish I enjoyed his adventures more.
so you totally gave up on that?
Yeah, I did.
The
I should probably jump back on.
As a jump on point, the most recent issue of the Avengers.
Oh, I did read that because it was fine.
Heaps of fun.
Yeah, real good fun.
So while War of the Realms goes on, most of the main heroes are kind of caught up going through the realms trying to save Thor and Midgard. We have the Avengers is now a team about Phil Coulson, who is working with Mephisto, to create his own Subsing Society. What's it? It's Hyperion and...
Squadron Supreme.
Squadron Supreme, that's it. So it's like, the Squadron Supreme of America. Mm. So it's Hyperion and Nighthawk and... basically, it's like DC's...
Justice League.
DC's edgy version of the Justice League from the late 90s, except they're now all working... They've been brainwashed into working for Phil Coulson and the American government.
Nice. I thought Phil Coulson was dead.
Yeah, so obviously he's made a deal with Mephisto to come back. It's great. It's so,
that was a really enjoyable issue. And I like that it kind of ties into War of the Realms, but not really.
Yeah, totally. It feels like a very separate thing. Like they're dealing with, you know, Norse threats to Earth.
Mm.
But, I mean, you can tell this is all going to be about all these things crumbling around them. That's a good thing about Squadron Supreme books. Like, I highly recommend... especially if you like Gary Frank's art on... Miracle... What's it called? Doomsday Clock. The first thing I read of him was all the Squadron Supreme stuff, and they're great. Yeah. I think it's with Michael Straczynski. It's like it's a bit edgy, and some of the stuff with the Wonder Woman character is pretty gross and dated. If you read comics, you're very used to turning a blind eye. And it's a very enjoyable series.
Mm.
And so it's always good to see those characters return, and I just think it's going to be fun. It's a fun little thing. I'm not reading any of the other tie-ins, are you? Toward the Realms?
I'm reading, like, all of the tie-ins.
That's so funny. That's some real Andrew Levin circa 1 year ago bullshit.
Well, I'm just enjoying War of the Realms.
I've grown as a person, everybody.
I'm just enjoying War of the Realms so much that then I pick up all the tie-ins and I'm like, this isn't illustrated by Russell Dauterman.
Yeah.
I don't like this at all. So the tie-ins haven't been that exceptional, I would say.
Bummer.
Yeah.
I haven't really been enjoying the Squirrel Girl tie-in either.
See, I haven't been reading Squirrel Girl because there's... not enough copies for me.
Oh, well, I can give you the most recent one if you would like to read that.
But I think it's the kind of book that would really suffer from being forced to tie into main continuity. That's hard.
I think if I'm in the wrong mood to read a Squirrel Girl book, I'll just be like, oh, it's too long.
It's
there's
too long.
Many
there's
words.
Too many jokes. I hate this.
Yeah. My wife is reading the book he wrote, Ryan North book. I think I talked about it last episode.
Yeah.
And she's loving it.
Yeah.
The book about the time machine.
He's a very clever man.
She'll be like, oh, look, he does these little jokes like at the bottom of the page. I'm like, yeah, I know.
No, he's been doing that since Dinosaur Comics, actually. I think you'll find.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, speaking of Jason Aaron, Conan issue number 6 came out with unbelievable art by Mahmoud Azra and great colors by Matthew Wilson. I'm ready for them to stop giving us little glimpses of story and then have like the end reveal be like the kind of weird magic children about to kill him.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Because I'm enjoying this being like almost like a anthology series of like weird short little Conan stories, but I also want something to sink my teeth into and have an ongoing plot. But maybe that's not the appeal of Conan.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sort of enjoying the structure of it at the moment. I think that Jason Aaron quite often does like the first arc is all the little one-off stories and then the next arc will be something more ongoing. And that's kind of what this felt like to me. Like, this felt like the last issue of this format and we'll get something more ongoing next.
Yeah.
But maybe not. I mean, I'm just loving this. And, like, Matthew Wilson's colours. Like, I don't think
that's brilliant.
Azra's art has ever looked this beautiful.
Conan sitting bloodied on top of a pile of bodies. Just, like, it shouldn't, but it looks absolutely gorgeous.
It's beautiful. It's a delight. I love this series. It's so enjoyable.
Yeah. Keeping things Avengery for a moment, I finally finished all of the Avengers No Road Home.
Oh, okay.
And I wish I didn't read it. This is the follow-up series to Avengers No Surrender by Al Ewing, Jim Zub, Mark Waid, Paco Medina, Jesus Zubertov, Shoin Isaacs, and Marcio Menez. I believe there may have been another artist or colorist throughout the 10 issues. But it revolved around a bunch of random Avengers. Scarlet Witch, Conan, Hercules, Spectrum, Vision, Voyager, Hulk, Rocket Raccoon, and Hawkeye dealing with a villain who was unleashed and killed all of Hercules' family. So all the gods, all the Greek gods, died at the start of this series. And the final issue was a very like self-congratulatory, like, this is how comics were made. And it's like this meta thing about like the creators and blah, blah, blah. And
is it Mark Waid?
Yeah, of course it's Mark Waid. Yeah. He loves doing shit like that. But it introduced Conan to the regular Marvel comics, and then they dump him in the in the Savage Land at the end. That's fun.
Ooh, okay.
And then it looks like Hercules is going to be a space guy now, so like kind of Thor-ish. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Who knows?
Fine.
Whatever. Probably won't read their follow up to No Road Home if they do one, but watch me do it anyway. Meet the Skrulls. You're reading this,
man,
right?
No, I'm so dumb. I missed the first issue and I've just never caught up.
Well, there's one issue left.
The trade comes out,
there's one issue left, and Marvel are pretty good with putting the trade out pretty quickly after it. This has been a wonderful mini series. Essentially, it's about, like, I compared it to Tom King's Vision series, where we have a family of four Skrulls who are living undercover as your everyday American family and having to infiltrate into American society as they try and bring it down from the inside.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really great study of family and deception and trying to live up to the crazy ideals that your parents expect of you.
The art's super cool.
Yeah, so it's written by Robbie Thompson. This is probably my favorite thing of his that I've ever read. And art is wonderful. It's by Nico Henrichon. There's one issue left, so I'll delve a little bit deeper into it once it's all been released. But, I mean, unless that's appalling, I would absolutely recommend this be on everyone's watch list for trade buy.
Cool.
It's one of those very special. I love miniseries.
Yeah.
It's completely contained. And it's just awesome. It's why I love comics.
Cool.
Another great miniseries that did finish was Winter Soldier by Kyle Higgins and Rod Reyes. A great little story about Bucky taking down a young would-be assassin being trained just like he was, like a young boy in his own image as well. He kind of looks like young Bucky. Almost involving himself in the young would-be assassin's life as a surrogate father until his actual father comes along. Look, it was a kind of a bummer of a series overall, but I feel like that's kind of what Bucky books should be like.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say bad about this series is that it was a mini series. It sets up such a great beginning for a long running Bucky run, which we haven't had in so long. I kind of wish this was an ongoing, but
it's gotten pretty great reviews though, and like quite a lot of attention. So you never know.
Really satisfying, if not sad ending. And I would love to see Kyle Higgins, you know, who's done great stuff with Nightwing in the past, and Bucky is Marvel's Nightwing, the closest sure thing to is. It anyway. So I would love to see him be given more with this character.
Yeah, cool.
Great stuff. Another miniseries was Spider-Man Life Story.
Why do I hate miniseries? I'm so dumb. I just also these are the
things that we should
this.
Be supporting. Marvel
yeah,
doing.
I know. Yeah. I'm a big dumb. I should stop reading all of the X-Men books.
This this Spider-Man book, Spider-Man Life Story, was meant to do a decade each issue.
Mm-hmm.
So we had Spider-Man issue one, Life Story issue one, the 60s last month. It was Chip Zdarsky wrote it with art by Mark Bagley, Andrew Hennessy, and Frank DeMata on art and colors. And I assumed that with each new decade, we would get a new artist. So I was like really excited to see them find
Mark Bagley.
Decade adjacent artists that would fit each run. And no, it's Mark Bagley doing the entire thing. So I was like, oh, okay. I guess I can deal with this. But then this issue is like the clone stuff.
Everyone's favorite Spider-Man era.
All the clone stuff, including a clone made. Who's the clone maker? What's his name?
I have no idea.
But he's revealed to have made clones of Gwen and Peter, and he made the Gwen because he loved her. But then once the clones are destroyed, he's like, no, wait, you're the clone. You just destroyed the original Gwen Stacy. it was just like, I don't want this.
Sucks.
Clone stuff sucks.
Clone stuff sucks. It does. No one enjoys it.
And like,
do they?
There's some clever ideas in it, I guess. I love the whole concept behind this, but it went to a place that I never wanted it to go straight away.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer. There's a hilarious scene with Mary Jane criticizing Peter for being so straight and not taking drugs with her at Studio 54. So that's fun.
Look, I support that.
Speaking of Spider-Man, though.
So I read Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man issue 6, written by our boy Tom Taylor, with art by Juan Cabal, colors by Nolan Woodard. And this is like a very one-off standalone issue that's, it's the kind of thing that like can be overly saccharine and the sort of thing that makes me roll my eyes. But Tom Taylor has quite a deft touch to these things, and so it does end up being quite sweet. So this introduces a character called Spider-Bite.
Which is a character that I think he wrote with his son.
Okay, that's really sweet then. So it's like an 8-year-old little Spider-Man, and the whole issue is like them going up against like a really classic version of Doc Ock and the Vulture, and like the whole Sinister Six show up, and they have to save the day. And then it's revealed at the end of the issue that this was like a thing that Spider-Man... I'm too pregnant. I'm going to cry. It's not even that bad. But he's a kid who has cancer, and Spider-Man goes to the hospital for the day to make his dream of being Spider-Man come true. It's really like... It could be so poorly handled and so bad, but...
I thought we got a really bad Superman take on that last year.
Yes, exactly. Tom Taylor just really does a great job, and like just as a little standalone book that really encapsulates some of the things that are amazing about superhero comics and about Spider-Man specifically, I think he just did a really, really great job, and it's a really nice issue.
And Juan Cabal is an amazing artist.
Juan Cabal's he's so good. That man of mystery. I love him.
Very good stuff.
Extremely good stuff.
Runaways, do you need tissue? You good?
No, I'm fine.
You need a sleeve. Runaways issue number 20. I am just very much on board with André Genelet.
Yeah,
as an artist.
He's killing it.
Yeah.
Good job, of course, man.
André took over from Chris Anker. And while he doesn't have as deft a touch when it comes to fashion, sometimes the characters wear some like kind of daggy looking 90s-ish clothes.
Chase is in far fewer crop tops, which is a real shame.
I think like the art is of great caliber.
Yeah.
Excellent. You know, very able to handle. And the story is just as good as it's
absolutely
ever been.
Absolutely. Like, it's managed to really keep the tone. And I think probably a lot of that has to do with the colors. I assume the color team's the same.
It's Triona Farrell. No, it was Wilson before.
Oh,
I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, like, the tone of the book is still really consistent. And you would hardly even notice, I think.
Yeah, honestly. Absolutely.
It's still everything that we loved about the original Runaways.
Yeah, because we got two issues that were by another artist who I usually really like, but he's such a different artist to Chris Anker that I was like, oh, no, what's going on?
I don't like this.
But this is a much better fit. And I think Chris Anker's going to start doing DC stuff now.
Yeah.
We swapped him for Patrick Gleason. Patrick Gleason's on Marvel now. He's a new Spider-Man artist.
Yeah.
I want Spencer off Spidey.
Yeah, I want Spencer off Spidey. I've never really seen Gleason as like a Spidey artist. I always think his stuff's so like blocky and it's not quite as loose as you'd want like a Spider-Man book to be. But whatever he does, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But yeah, Runaway is still excellent. Still like the sometimes sad teen drama book without any superheroes fighting in it that it's always been. I love it.
Yeah,
it's so good.
It's such a great like example of being able to do a YA book in a mainstream superhero context without having to like label it as like, this is YA.
Totally.
You know?
We're 20 issues in. How great that it got 20 issues.
Amazing. Like, amazing. I hope it just continues.
I hope this falls in the like Squirrel Girl, Moon Girl, where they're like, oh, we know this is a niche thing. Let's just keep it going for it.
I mean, I think that it's popular enough that they don't even need to like come up with a reason. Like,
yep.
We underestimate how big these books are at libraries and yep. things like that. Like, they really do keep a lot of comic series going. So it's cool.
Finally, Chip Zdarsky's Daredevil with art by Marcus Tichetto.
I've fallen off this, but not because I don't like Marco it. Tichetto. Just I'm
Sunny Go
very tired.
Oh, Sunny Go. Cool. Man, this is a good Daredevil book. I'm sorry for all the things I said when I read issue one, and I was like, it's just more of the same. It was a familiar start, and now he's changing it up. We get actually, this is definitely more of the same. Would you believe in this issue of Daredevil, he has an argument with the Punisher about whether or not it's okay to kill people? It's never happened in a Daredevil book before.
Is it okay to kill people, or is it just fine to maim them horribly?
Yeah, exactly. But the issue ends with knocking out Frank. Because Frank like takes a very wounded Daredevil back to his like weird underground, you know, man cave. Daredevil,
a couple of Bruce
shirtless Daredevil,
video games.
Shirtless Daredevil escapes and puts on a Punisher T-shirt.
So amazing!
It's like the end is him.
Cool. Daredevil cosplaying as Punisher.
Yeah, really good. Pun Devil. Danisher.
Danisher.
Okay.
That's much better.
Do you need to do a wee before we do Image?
Look, yes. But okay, yes.
Let's do it. Oh, that was great.
Great.
Let's talk about Image books, which I hope can be almost as great. What have we got here? Big pile of Image books that I've read most of.
Oh, wow.
So I read Little Bird.
Okay.
You read issue one last episode. Little Bird is a book by Darcy Van Poelgeest and Ian Bertram mm-hmm. and Matt Hollingsworth. The first issue is insane.
Yeah.
Bertram's art, first and foremost, is like the main
selling
point.
So nice. So nice.
But it's about like an escape and a cult religion thing.
Yep.
It's very crazy all over the place narrative wise. And then the second issue, I found a lot more info dump.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Did you read second issue?
No. I'm so behind on everything.
So now after being like, wow, that's one of the best first issues I've ever read, I'm like, I don't know if I can continue with the series. But Bertram's art is phenomenal.
It's so nice. It's so like dark horsey and intricate and just lovely.
I'm going to wait for trade on it because there's so much lore and weird shit to remember issue to issue. Like even just trying to, I was like, okay, what happened?
Who could say?
An escape, apparently. Excellent stuff. Headlopper and the Knights of Venora, issue number 11 of the third volume. So issue mm-hmm. 3 of volume 3.
Mm-hmm.
This is written and drawn by Andrew McLean with colors by Jordi Belair. And this is the first issue of this volume that I really loved.
I think it's the best issue of the volume.
Yeah, it's all about a war against goblins.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really know who to trust, but this is another one that's becoming maybe I need to wait for trade on this because I don't keep these at home anymore.
So
I'm like, oh, what the fuck happened? After because this comes out quarterly.
But it's so enjoyable. Like even when I don't remember what's happened in the last issue of Headlopper, I'm still like, oh yeah, Headlopper, this is the best.
He's gonna cut someone's head off again.
I love it so much. It's so great.
Yeah, but you know what has just been absolutely enormously good
in
recent issues is Ice Cream Man.
Yes. Oh, my God.
So we just had issues 9, 10, 11, and 12 over the last 3 months, and they are a volume in itself. And each of these issues was almost set in like a different universe. The absolute highlight is issue number 11. Of course, this is the book by W. Maxwell Prince with art by Martin Marazzo, colors by Chris O'Halloran. So Ice Cream Man is a horror anthology series, but the one thing connecting all the stories in each issue is the presence of this evil ice cream man. And then gradually throughout the series, we meet a cowboy who is trying to take down the ice cream man. So the cowboy represents good, the ice cream man represents bad. We've had issues that straight up tell the backstories of these two characters. We meet their father figure. We learn why they hate each other. We then have been given these crazy, very like even higher concept than usual Ice Cream Man issues. We got one that was almost all in Spanish. And then we got this brilliant one, issue number 11, which was our reality TV show.
We follow
a character called Will Parson, who keeps finding himself like trying to escape from different reality TV shows that are just completely insane. Like one of them is like him. One of them is called Mannequin House, and it's him trying to vow for the affection of a bunch of mannequins.
I would watch that.
There's Family Autopsy, and so while he's in all these shows, he's being watched by his family, who are like, "Where's Will gone? And then there's one called America's Got Intestines." And in which he finds himself just like all his guts falling out of his stomach and...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, wealthy family of zombies. So it's like the most like comedic of all the Ice Cream Man issues so far, but still very...
Incredibly
dark.
Hilarious. Wow.
And the final page is called Missing Parsons.
Great.
Very good.
Did you read issue 12?
Yes. So this is the most recent issue, which was insane.
Yeah, man, it's a really good issue. It's just a straight up sci-fi, self-contained sci-fi,
and really straight sci-fi
Yes,
in which
really spooky too.
Yeah, in which
spooky
a bunch of aliens land on a spooky planet and find a spooky alien who is the ice cream man basically, who is like this awful spider creature.
Yeah. And Martin Marazzo's art is so exceptional.
Yep.
Like, it's just so detailed and so expressive, and the pages are so beautifully laid out and paced, and I just love it.
Yeah, so I guess it's this weird battle between good and evil. That's what this book is about.
Yeah.
But
every issue is like a fun surprise, and you never really know when these characters that you actually recognize are going to show up.
Yeah, I love it. It's such an incredibly good series, Ice Cream Man. I hope it's one of those ones that I hope they release in like a bunch of really, really beautiful hardcovers.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so too.
It's a special book. It deserves special treatment. The finale of Die, 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 this volume of Die, Die, Die happened.
Okay.
Issue number 8, that wrapped up a lot of the story, and we're now taking a break
For a while. It.
Man, the issue 8 was awesome.
Yeah.
It was so good. This is written by...
fall back on.
Robert Kirkman, Scott M. Gimple, with art by Chris Burnham and Nathan Fairbairn. A very, very over-the-top action movie kind of book. And this had so many insane, like, reveals of, you know, people who died, people who we thought were dead that weren't actually dead, and all these weird setup for future issues. So I'm looking forward to this madness returning at some point later this year.
It's so fun. It's the most fun I've ever had reading a Robert Kirkman book.
Yeah, it's definitely the funnest Robert Kirkman book, and the trade is out very soon. Speaking of Robert Kirkman... Still reading Walking Dead.
That's
my review of issue number 191. Well, no, something
it
crazy
continues.
Happens. So I'm just going to show you what happens at the end of 191. I'm not going to tell you. So
I kicked him in the dick?
That's right. Yep, someone gets kicked in the dick in Walking Dead. It's a shocker. But something pretty big happens at the end of 191. And the fact that there wasn't much of a reaction to it that I saw...
indicates how few people are still reading Walking Dead or care about it.
I don't know, but maybe they just kind of take it for granted now. But it is strange. Yeah. It's still a pretty good comic book. It's infinitely better than the TV show.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
I mean, comics are better than TV.
That's true. Everyone knows that. How about Assassination?
Issue
number 2.
I love this book.
Kyle Starks writes this book with Erica Henderson on art duties.
Fuck, I love Erica Henderson. I love Erica Henderson.
She's such a brilliant artist. And this is a book all about all of the world, America's top assassins being brought together in the same place to protect one man. And almost all of them die in the first issue. And we have a much smaller team in the second issue. And they keep getting whittled down throughout the issue. So they decide that the only way to save someone from being assassinated is to plan an assassination.
Yeah.
It's very, very funny. The art is excellent. It's a great book.
It's really good. It's really silly. It's really funny. Erica Henderson is the best.
Yep.
The character designs are super fun. I just love it.
Yeah.
I just love it so much.
It's like all bangers from here on to the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Siobhan. Snot Girl. We got an excellent issue of Snot Girl.
Oh, man.
Called The Pop-Up. In which Snot Girl, Lottie, a.k.a. Snot Girl, in this book written by Brian Lee O'Malley with art by Leslie Hung, Rachel Cohen on colors, has a pop-up store.
Yeah, where she sells, like, T-shirts and pictures of herself.
And
I would buy that.
Yeah, definitely. She's great. It's just such a crazy book with, like, you know, weird relationship stuff, mm-hmm. but also, like, weird...
Like
that
really
stuff.
unsettling undertone and the stuff that's developing with these characters who appear to have been around for a really long time and have not aged and seem to be controlling things or at least messing with everyone's lives behind the scenes.
Yep.
It's just, I just love it. It's like this beautiful cotton candy colored dream that occasionally dips into being incredibly uneasy feeling. And I just love it. I think it's so clever.
And this issue mainly revolves around a dog taking a shit on the floor at her pop-up store and how they deal with that. It's great.
It's so good, man. It's so good.
So good. One of the best. Good.
I love Leslie.
Are you loving Criminal by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips?
Yes, I am. Man.
Issue 2 and 3 were... So this is like the new ongoing Criminal series by the two of the best pairing in comics alive right now.
I don't know about that, but it's good.
Okay. Maybe you want to give it to Leslie Hung and Brian Lee O'Malley?
Yes.
Okay. One of the best, along with Jacob Phillips on colors. We have like an ongoing series of... it's almost like we get a bunch of short stories. One of them might be 1 issue long, one of them might be 2 issues, smaller issues, more. Issue 2 and 3 was all about a Comic-Con and a young artist having to escort a kind of disgruntled... comic book artist who's much older than him to receive an award at this Comic-Con, and he gets convinced to commit some crimes with him.
Yay!
And that was so well received that they're actually turning that into a hardcover edition with extra
with some bonus
stuff.
Content.
So absolutely going to get that, even though I've read, I'm sure, all but 3 pages of it.
I mean, the cover is so, like, it's beautiful.
And it's the same format as My Heroes Have Always Been Junkies, which Image published last year and was beautiful. So, it's an absolute must purchase. But issue 4, we learn more from the family of the Lawlesses, who are kind of like the main family that we've seen throughout all the different years of through the Criminal series. Teague Lawless, I guess, has been in the most issues. But in 1993, we follow his son, Ricky Lawless, through a particularly bad day in which he does too much speed and has to deal with a bunch of dead bodies.
We've all been there.
This is another one of like those, like, this is the opposite of Snot Girl in that this is a book about really uneasy, unsettling stuff that's occasionally beautiful.
Yes. Yes.
It's an absolute must read.
It's the best. It's like, if you're reading any other crime comics and you're not reading this, then you're a very silly person.
Yeah.
Because it's the best crime comics. The back matter is always A+, so it's worth getting in the single. Every issue stands alone, even if it's part of a larger story. So you can just pick up any issue that you find and it's going to be amazing. Like, this was a great issue.
Yeah, so if you want a taste of what this series is like, go buy Bad Weekend.
Yeah.
Which is the collected issue 2 and 3 coming out soon through Image and hardcover. Good shit.
Yep.
Hey, speaking of good shit, what the fuck is going on in Gideon Falls right now?
Oh my God. I love it so much because I thought that this was going to be one of Lemire's sort of shorter, more self-contained, like maybe a 12-issue series. And what this issue sort of opened up is so much more expansive and so far beyond where I thought this was going to go.
You know
it's
what he
so
opened up?
So clever.
The motherfucking lid.
He opened up. He opened that barn door.
This is now like a multiverse time travel story.
So good, man. He's
written
so
by
good.
Jeff Lemire. Andrea Sorrentino doing the best art that I've ever seen him do.
Yep.
And great colors by Dave Stewart. It's like, yeah, it's, I love it when a book that you associate as one genre is suddenly like three different ones.
Yeah, it actually kind of weirdly reminds me of the next book that we're going to talk about, Paper Girls, in that the first arc you were like, oh, I think I know what this is.
Yes.
And then by the third arc you're like, what is this?
Paper Girls has been phenomenal in these recent issues as it heads towards, I think the final issue is issue 30.
Yeah.
So I read issues 26, 27, 28 in the last month and
it's so good, man. It's so good. Like now that everything's like really being tied up, everything's coming together, all these threads that you were like, what has this got to do with anything? It's all starting to pay off in like the most satisfying way. And it's the last couple of issues have been so good.
Yeah. So this is written by Brian K. Vaughan with Cliff Chang and Matt Wilson on art duties. And yeah, it is like this insane time travel story about four girls and visiting different timelines. They're all split up at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And this issue 28 has that great device where you, where the page is divided into four sections and each panel strip tells like from the point of view of a different girl who's in a different place at a different time. And they all work towards meeting each other at the end. So good.
It's the best.
Excellent art. Excellent writing.
And I think I'm so excited for people who get to like read this as
in
a whole.
One hit? Yeah, definitely. Ugh. So good, man.
So good.
The Wicked and the Divine. It's really crazy. A lot of books that I... In fact, all of these next books...
Are they all finishing up?
They're all books that like I kind of associate with me starting to get into comic book collecting in a big way are all wrapping up now. And it feels like I'm like, yes, it's ending. I can stop buying it all the time. So The Wicked and the Divine by Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey with Matt Wilson and Clayton Cowles is an image series that's all about gods being reborn as pop stars. It's been insanely fun over the last few issues. Just crazy action, crazy like betrayals and twists and turns. I can't really talk to you about anything that happened because I'll spoil all of the insanity.
I wouldn't understand it anyway.
But I think another thing that's common with all these books is that I think they're all going to have very, very satisfying endings.
Mm.
Same as East of West, the Jonathan Hickman and Nick Dragota with Frank Martin book that's all about the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse and the world's been divvied up into sections and everyone's in a war now. And so the war's coming to a head, and what better way to advance the current day story than delving back into the past and seeing how we got into this mess in the first place. And that's exactly what we get in issue 42. And
such dreamy colours.
Yeah, it was excellent. Really, really great. And Black Science by Rick Remender and Matteo Scalera. That's on its final arc as well. I think it's ending at issue 42. And not quite on the same level as satisfying as the last few books have been. But this has been like an insane science fiction come fantasy come superhero come, you know, like human misery is a Remender book after all. Comic book series that has just done so much in its time with us. And
I wonder what Remender's going to do next.
Well, he's still got Deadly Class is still going, so I can talk about Deadly Class right now. Deadly Class issue number 38 saw Marcus return to the high school.
Whoa!
Did you read this one?
No, again, it's like one that I've just fallen off of.
Rick Remender with amazing art by Wes Craig and Jordan Boyd on colors in this great series that I always think, like, surely this has done all it can do. And now I'm like, yeah, with this issue, I feel like they've breathed. We could get like another 60 issues just off this premise of this issue alone.
Cool.
All these new students, entire new status quo where Marcus is now kind of like a hero at this school. Mm. I've got no idea where it's going to go next.
It's so cool. Have you watched the TV show?
No, I haven't. I don't think it's available in Australia.
People have said it's pretty good. I've heard good things. But it's a concept that's so... It could go on forever, you know? Like, it's easily applicable to, like, a whole bunch of different stuff. Yeah, totally. It's X-Men, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Which, as we know, is good forever.
Yeah, I noticed that your X-Men reviews were absent from this episode.
Yeah.
We should just leave it at we're excited about Jonathan Hickman taking over.
I'm so excited for Jonathan Hickman. Oh, man, it's going to be great. Can't wait.
So on to other publishers now.
Okay.
The Terminator Sector War by Brian Wood and Jeff Stokely. This was the book set in 1984 in New York City. And I've never read a Terminator comic before, and I really enjoyed it.
I've only just watched the Terminator movies.
I feel like you've seen the last few episodes. Yeah, they're great. Yeah. As in, like, you watched them this morning again?
No. Just as in, I've only recently seen them.
Well, how many? You're kind of talking about the first two?
Yeah, the first two.
You're not going to watch Salvation?
Nah.
No, probably don't.
I hate what's his name. Is the Australian guy in it?
Jai Courtney.
Oh, no. I thought it was someone else.
You know, if you're someone that loves those first two movies and then is like, oh my God, all other Terminator movies and media suck, this was one that absolutely didn't.
Great.
Really, really fun, beautifully drawn, satisfying Terminator book.
Cool.
Very cool shit. Fearscape also had its final issue, issue number 5 of this book, by Ryan O'Sullivan with Andrea Muti and Vladimir Popov. And I wasn't entirely happy with the way this book that was about, like, a writer using a, like, basically stealing the work of an older writer, mm-hmm. and then landing himself in trouble in a weird fantasy world where he needs to write heroes that can kill the worst fears in the world, or write fears that kill heroes. The ending was a bit heavy-handed in terms of, like, linking it back to something in the real world that fucked up this you know, bad character.
Okay.
But I, it doesn't really suggest that you need to excuse his behavior because of what happened before it all, but I don't know. I guess it wasn't how I expected the book to end, so I didn't necessarily dislike it. It just was like, oh, okay, that's how this ends.
Right.
There you go. Barbarella and Deja Thoris.
I'm so glad you're reading this.
Written by Leah Williams with German Garcia on art, through Dynamite. This is on its 3rd of 4 issues.
Yep.
It's really, really great, and I just want Leah Williams to be given a massive, like, I just
pile
wanna,
of money.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I would love her on. I hate that she's got that X-Men book. It's still not her able to do things on her own terms because she has to tie into all the other X-Men stuff.
But she's still able to, like, use her own voice and say what she wants to say within the confines of that.
Mm.
Which, even though I don't love that series specifically, I'm still into what she's doing. And I think that, you know, like, she's got a couple of, like, little tie-in books coming up. She's doing one of the War of the Realms
tie-ins. Yeah, I saw that one. It's really good, yeah.
A couple of things like that. And I think that as she just builds up that sort of back catalogue of, like, little one-off tie-in Marvel stuff,
mm-hmm.
and proves herself, hopefully they will give her something bigger because I think she's great.
Yeah, I mean, Barbarella and Deja Thoris certainly aren't the household names that X-Men are. But she has such a great, well-defined voice for both of them.
Yeah.
And the adventure story, while this is, like, probably the slowest issue of the series so far, it's still really fun.
Yeah. And it's, like, smart and silly and beautifully illustrated. And I just love it. I think it's so good. Thank you to the listener whose name I've forgotten who recommended that I pick that up.
Thank you, listener, if that is your real name. We'll end on some Black Hammer stuff.
Yeah.
I tried to read
What's that?
The Life and Death of Toyo Harada.
I
love Valiant
really
comics.
I've really fallen off everything Valiant. I feel sad about
it. It's a gap in my comic book knowledge that I wish wasn't there. Every time I try and fill it, it's like I'm either really, really on board with it, like, you know, the Bloodshot stuff that Lemire did, or the what was that one about the kid?
The
Savage. Savage, that was awesome.
Oh, I don't know what you're
talking about. You're talking about the Cosmic one. That was sick too.
No, I'm thinking about the one that was the Raul.
What's
his name? You know, the one that was like...
The one.
Super trendy and used interesting panel layouts.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. With
you
the
all
kids,
know what I'm talking about.
Like the X-Men book, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
about the science.
Yeah.
But so Toyo Harada is kind of at the heart of all of the Harbinger, like, Syat stuff. He's essentially, like, a cross between Professor X and Magneto.
Because
mm-hmm. He uses, like, psychic powers, but he also has, like, ties to World War II, and he's a bad guy that thinks he's doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is written by Joshua Dizart, who is someone that I've recently become a big fan of,
mm-hmm.
With art by Cafu and Butch Geis. And I was hoping I would just love this, but I think it's one of those things where if I knew more about the Valiant world, I would enjoy it more, but unfortunately I don't, so I didn't.
Fair enough.
But it looks great. And there's some interesting concepts in there. Just wasn't necessarily for me at this point in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. I read issue 1 and 2 of She Could Fly, The Lost Pilot.
It's good.
Written by Christopher Cantwell with Martin Marazzo and Miroslav Merva. Of course, we loved the first series mm-hmm. of this. And this follow-up is even more fucked up than the first one, and there's so many more moving parts.
Yeah. But I'm finding it harder to follow than the first one, just because there are so many more narrative threads going on. But I have enough faith in this creative team that it's going to come together really satisfyingly.
Yeah.
And it's still, like, horrifically gorgeous to look at.
Definitely, especially during the gory parts.
I don't know how Martin Razzo is managing to keep up this schedule at the moment, but he's a talented man.
But I love that. Yeah, we're going to get a little love story for our main character, which is sweet.
In a sort of funny kind of way.
Of course, it couldn't be any other way. But yeah, I'm into this. It's a great series. It's great to have it back.
It's really great.
Of course, it's going to be great.
Of course.
These Savage Shores, the vault book that you should absolutely be reading.
Yeah,
hopefully the trade comes out soon so you can catch up. But this is the vampire book set in on the shores of India at some point in the 17th, so the 18th century, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a monster book, but in a land that we don't really get that many Western comics from. It's awesome. It's really, really well written. Great character work, great dialogue, excellent monster designs. It's written by Ram V with art by Sumit Kumar and colors by Vittorio Estone. It's really, really unique and cool. Like, it's great reading a proper spooky horror comic that isn't, you know, funny horror or like cutesy horror. This is just like artistic horror.
Cool.
It's really unique and cool because normally it's just like a bunch of white people in those movies, and this one is totally like feels like something very, very different to me that I'm enjoying. And we're going to end on...
I read the last issue of The Lodger, which I want to talk about. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Shit. Okay, cool. I might pick up three or four. I kind of fell off that of all things, considering how much I love The Laughams.
It's really good.
Yeah, great. Awesome. I'm glad you liked it.
Ended up in a very, very satisfying way. Super enjoyable. Really loved it. Highly recommended. Highly recommended. Terrifying, scary horror comic. Not horror comic. Crime comic.
Yeah. Was it enticing enough to you to maybe consider starting my favorite series? Something Bullets. Stray Bullets.
Stray Bullets. Oh yeah, totally. Totally. I'm not opposed to Stray Bullets. It's just it's a heavy tome.
It is.
And I struggle to even read.
Light tome. So we're going to end on Black Hammer.
Yes, please.
Jeff Lemire's Black Hammer, Age of Doom. We've got issue 10 of that with Dean Monson, Dave Stewart, and Todd Klein. Of course, this sees the heroes of Black Hammer on a new planet in which none of them remember their past or who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have the team kind of once one of them works out who they are, trying to wake up the others. And we've seen this kind of book before. It's kind of like what Black Hammer kind of is all the time. It's like things that you've seen in superhero comics at some point in your life, but done in a new and fresh way.
Absolutely.
And
it's just clever and smart and using the genre to its potential. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just battles. It's like crazy high concept. Weird shit going on all the time, and it's never what you expect, and it's clever and it's smart and it's emotionally hefty, and I just think it's so good, and Dean Ormston's so good, and Jeff Lemire is so smart.
A very excellent final page reveal of someone, a character that we've not seen in Black Hammer yet. We've not in present day, and who knows if it's a fake out or whatever, but very, very exciting to see him show
up. And Black Hammer has some of the best final page reveals.
Definitely, great twists.
Worthwhile getting in single issue just for that experience.
Did you stay up to date with Black Hammer 45?
I am still reading it, but it's easily my least favorite of the Black Hammer tie-ins, I have to say.
So this is the one co-written by Jeff Lemire and Ray Fawkes with art by Matt Kint and Charlene Kint. And it's set in 1945. It's a World War II book in which a group of soldiers who name themselves Black Hammer.
Yeah.
Like they are the Black Hammers.
They go do some.
They're like
some
the kind
legal
of,
crimes.
They are the war crimes. Yeah, they're just the regular soldiers that have to fight super powered threats in a world where superheroes are starting to emerge. It's good. I thought this is probably the best issue of the run so far, but there's only one more, so not much slogging for you that you need to do now.
It is like more of a slog than the other,
which the others are just a joy to read. Yeah. I reckon that hopefully this is like Lemire. Okay, it should only be me that writes these. I don't know.
Yes.
I still really like it. I love Kin's art.
Yeah, I just don't know how suited it is to like the genre. But whatever. What do I know? I just think if you I honestly think if you read any superhero book, it should be Black Hammer. Like above right, any sure, other course, any yeah. other superhero book out there. Like I think it does what superhero comics can. It shows you what they can do. You know what I mean? Rather than just repeating the same stories over and over again.
Yeah, hitting that reset button. Yeah. Although that's kind of what they did. But
I don't care. It's the best. It's the best one.
So that's it for this episode. Siobhan, have you got anything you're looking forward to be reading next?
Oh, man. I don't know what's coming out. Definitely those new DC books. They sound really cool. Jonathan Hickman's X-Men. I'm so thrilled about. Oh, my God. I'm so excited. I can't wait.
I just started JoJo's Bizarre Adventure yesterday.
Okay, I've tried to read that. That's a tough read.
Did you start from the beginning?
Yeah.
The beginning's so fun and weird and cool. It's so weird. It's like set in London and Jack the Ripper's in it.
Yeah. Maybe I need to give it a better go. I'm still
it's
making
like
80s, my way through.
It's like weird, glamorous, very gay 80s manga rules.
It's really bizarre. It is properly bizarre. I'm still reading 20th Century Boys, so I'm trying to make a last go Let's to get through that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to try and get through that this year too.
Yeah, nice. I'll give you my copies after I'm done.
Oh, fantastic. Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
We'll see you again next month. And if you want to come and talk to us, the best place to do that is facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast, our Facebook group, which you are welcome to join to talk with us and many other comic book loving fans 24 hours a day. And if you want to support the show in any way, this is just us doing it month to month out of the goodness of our hearts and also the necessity to talk about everything we read.
Yes.
Because no one else will listen to us.
No one wants to talk to me.
But if you do want to support the show, if you want to kick a buck or two to us, we have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/Serious Issues Podcast. And we appreciate and love everyone who supports us.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
And Siobhan, any final thoughts?
Can't wait to get this baby out of my belly. Oh, and thanks. Shout outs to Gary, who came and said hi at Free Comic Book Day. That was really lovely. Nice to chat to you.
I can't wait to get this baby out of my tummy, and shout outs to Gary.
That's it.
Doesn't get better than that. Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford Tough, Built Ford Proud.